So you said that you started out in accounting, you did a bachelor's in accounting.
Yeah.
And then you went into the county as a controller, and then you
worked in the controller's office as an auditor.
Worked there
for 5 years doing fiscal and operational audits of the various county departments. Then moved down to social services in fall of 99. I was an accounting supervisor down there for 4 years or so, I think. And now I'm currently the executive deputy commissioner of the department. So,
great. Do you enjoy that work?
Yeah, very much. It's challenging trying to determine how the county funds social and human services is challenging work because you know, our programs are funded with a mix of federal, state, and local dollars. You know, the state dictates a lot of the policy to us. You know, they mandate the programs we have to provide. They don't always fund them to the level they should be funded. So we struggle at the local level to take those mandates and provide the best service we can with the resources we have. So, I mean, in line with what you're asking, obviously innovation becomes very important to try and you know, work with the limited resources we have to deliver those services effective and efficiently and fair to the taxpayers who are paying for it. You know, the actual Muni Miner system is less of an example of the innovation we've undertaken to try and address that. And that's why I think, you know, we can go through what we've done with the Muni Minder and what it's allowed us to do. But on a scale of 1 to 10, it's at the bottom in regards to the things we've done or are doing now that will help us in that mission of really becoming streamlined and effective and efficient in delivering our services.
So so innovation, you're sort of, it seems like you're saying, is part of your job. It's a central part of your job, or is it?
It's part of all of our jobs. Mainly, it's you know, the administration as well as the managers of the department. But you know, staff have just as much at stake, and they're just as involved with rolling out some of these projects. You know, they have to be supportive of it, in agreement with it, or it's not going to work. You know, we have a staff of 750 people, and you know, management just can't dictate, you know, how we're going to do business. So, you know, they have to, you know, have an equal voice and have you know, an opportunity to have input into these projects and the, you know, because in essence we're looking at how we operate and we're trying to figure out a better way to operate. And you know, who better to have involved with that than the people who are going to be doing the work. So, you know, I could talk a little bit about the specific things we've done. I mean, the Muni Miner, like I said, is a little less in the path I think that you're looking for, because it's a product that was developed by a private company that was initially developed for the bottling industry. And Guy Amasano, who's the president of Salient Corporation, their headquarters is in Horseheads, which is near Elmira, and it's in Chemung County. And in Chemung County, I can't remember the exact percent, but it's very high. I think it's upwards 75 to 80% of their tax bill goes to pay Medicaid. So the county executive there is obviously very concerned with the program and ways to maybe approach the program in different views, in different ways. And Guy, I think, approached the county executive out there and said, "Hey, I got this tool, very powerful tool that we developed for this purpose, but I think I can apply it to Medicaid." And that's what they did. And that's where they started. They started with Chemung County. Now, Chemung County's using it for kind of a different purpose than what we ended up using it for. But that's where it started, was in Chemung County. And we were the second ones to buy this, I think. And really what it's allowed us to do, I don't know how familiar you are with the Medicaid program. Are you
fairly
familiar? You know, the local district, the county role in Medicaid is very limited. It's to determine eligibility. That's what it's always been. You know, the rates, the policy, the eligibility criteria, it's all set by the state. So we, in essence, determine eligibility and pay a portion of the bill. The only rates we even get involved with that have any control over are transportation rates, to like Medicaid cabs and ambulances and that type of thing. So,
what proportion of the bill is local?
It used to be 20. The historical percentages were 25, except for long-term care. And long-term care was 10%. That's nursing home care, home health care.
But now there's 25, 50, 50 for federal.
50 federal, yeah. But now the state has capped the local districts. Mm-hmm. Their share of Medicaid. Mm-hmm. It started in starting with 2005. It was based on 2005 actual expenditures, local mm-hmm. expenditures. Mm-hmm. They use that as a base, and then there's an inflationary factor that's applied every year now. Mm-hmm. So our liability is limited to that inflation factor, which is 3% now. It started out at 3.5 or 3.75, and then it went down to 3.5, 3.25. Now it's 3 forever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's non-compounded, so it mm-hmm. always goes back to the base year. Mm-hmm. So that was obviously put in place to limit county's liability because mm-hmm. the county tax bill is just getting mm-hmm. crippled.
So where does that Medicaid go? Who takes care of that? Is it the state that promises to make the difference between what the
yep.
federal?
Exactly. So the Fed still kicks in what they normally would, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and then the states now pay their quarter plus whatever they got to pick up to close mm-hmm. that gap mm-hmm. of what they alleviated for the counties.
So there was a lot in the newspaper about that.
Oh, yeah, right? A ton about it, yeah. Because the counties were just screaming. They couldn't, you know, the pressure that it was putting on our budgets was mm-hmm. immense. Mm-hmm. So, and there's a nice feature in there as well, and the state still keeps track of what we would have paid under the old funding methodology. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the year, they still take, okay, this is what you would have paid under the old method. Mm-hmm. This is what you paid via the cap. Mm-hmm. And they do a reconciliation. So if you actually would have paid less under the old methodology, they give you money back. So that's a really great feature. Yeah. We actually were under the cap the very first year, mm-hmm. but now it doesn't look like that will happen again unless mm-hmm. something, you know, really significant happens at the state level. So, so that's kind of the financing mm-hmm. of Medicaid. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we bought the product in really with the idea of fraud in mind first, mm-hmm. and you know it became somewhat apparent that we really weren't going to be able to use it for fraud for a couple of reasons. One, on the provider side, provider fraud, Medicaid provider fraud is under the purview of the state. It's their program. They reserve the right to provider fraud. Local districts don't have the authority to engage in any activity in regards to provider fraud.
Okay, meaning Medicaid service providers.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So our role has always been client behavior and fraud. Mm-hmm. That's what we've always had the ability and the authority to engage in, to investigate, prosecute if necessary. Mm-hmm. So when we first bought this, there was a demo project out there. There still is a demo project that we just got admitted to within the last few months mm-hmm. that... It took a long time to get into it.
This is a demonstration project?
It's a demonstration project that mm-hmm. came out when the cap was put in place. There was language included in the state budget that allowed for local demonstration projects. Mm-hmm. And one of them, and really the only one that's out there is that I'm aware of, is this mm-hmm. provider fraud demonstration project. Mm-hmm. And there's 14 counties in it now. There was initially 12 counties, I believe. And what it does, it allows you to, in essence, work under the auspices of the OMIG, which is a newly created office around that same time, the Office of Medicaid Inspector General.
All right.
They're kind of the overseer of all fraud efforts.
Okay.
That office was created in Pataki's last year, or last budget year, I think.
Just Medicaid fraud?
Yes.
Okay. Which is the biggest, largest concern out of all the human services fraud?
I don't know if it's the biggest concern, mm-hmm. but I think... You know, I don't know if you saw that New York Times article a while back about fraud down in New York City. It really started shedding a lot of light on it. A lot of people started, you know, pretty much saying, why aren't you going after all this fraud? This mm-hmm. program is costing billions and billions of dollars, and you're just throwing the money out the door. Mm-hmm. So it was somewhat of a reaction to that, I think. Mm-hmm. And so the OMIG's office was created around, mm-hmm. I think it was Pataki's last year or so.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they're kind of the overseer of all that fraud now. Mm-hmm. So what the demo project did is allowed certain districts that actually wanted in at that time to actually conduct provider audits. Mm-hmm. And it's under the guise of the OMIG. They had, you know, they determine the audit plan or they approve the audit plan. You know, you pretty much are an agent of theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we just got into it, so we're still kind of feeling our way through it and how we mm-hmm. want to proceed.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be an application for this.
Mm-hmm.
Would be to use the data that's in here
mm-hmm.
to look at it, to look for anomalies and look for outliers,
mm-hmm.
to then point to and say, that's who we want to go review.
Mm-hmm.
Once we identified somebody, we have to submit that to the OMIG. They
mm-hmm.
have to do all their clearance process on it, make sure no one else is auditing that provider.
Right.
They haven't been audited recently.
Right.
You know, there's a ton of different entities out there mm-hmm. that, you know, you got the AG, the OMIG, you got the Federal Inspector General.
The AG, the Attorney General.
Yep. So you got a lot of different entities that potentially could be auditing this provider. So there's this whole clearance process that you have to go through. Once that's done,
mm-hmm.
You know, and they say, okay, you can audit them. And then we'd be able to go in and audit.
Mm-hmm.
So we just got, you know, we just got into this.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a use for this, which we haven't used it for
mm-hmm.
as of yet. But that
sure.
was one of the original
sure.
reasons
yeah.
we bought this.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from that, really what we've used it for has been to review and look at utilization of services by clients.
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned earlier, client fraud has always been our responsibility, but in regards to eligibility,
mm-hmm.
which means, you know, someone applies for Medicaid,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, there's certain eligibility requirements, obviously,
mm-hmm.
and our responsibility has always been to investigate and prosecute,
mm-hmm.
you know, fraud in that nature, if it's happened.
Mm-hmm.
What we thought initially maybe we could do was a different slant on fraud, and that's more in regards to services that have some type of black market value, like prescription narcotics
mm-hmm.
or durable medical equipment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there has been instances of fraud out there that we haven't uncovered,
mm-hmm.
but the AG's office has. But it became pretty apparent that we weren't going to be able to use this for that purpose either.
Mm-hmm.
So really what we ended up focusing on was utilization, more of an abuse or a waste
mm-hmm.
of services.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we ended up focusing our efforts on, was looking at those services
mm-hmm.
And those clients utilizing those services that were potentially abusing them or misusing them.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Because if you look at the Medicaid program, we're a mandatory managed care county.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our recipients we mandate into managed care, which means you know what an HMO is in essence.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know we pay a premium to one of the HMOs, and then they coordinate and manage all their care and pay the rec
mm-hmm.
care providers.
Okay.
There's a big cohort of individuals that are exempt from managed care. That's your people who are on Medicaid because they're on SSI. So that means they have a disability,
mm-hmm.
or you're elderly.
Mm-hmm.
They'll never enroll the elderly in managed care.
Mm-hmm.
So mainly what we focused on were...
Or is that the managed care don't want them?
Well, it's if you think about it, it's long-term care. I mean, it's not... Managed care companies aren't going to finance
right.
long-term care.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, that's carved out naturally.
Mm-hmm.
But... And the SSI population, which is disabled, and if you look at those two populations, they utilize the most amount of Medicaid
mm-hmm.
services, and they're carved out of managed care.
Right, right.
So that means all of their services are fee for service. So there's no one coordinating their care.
Mm-hmm.
As an aside, we're actually starting to enroll and make mandatory managed care for the SSIs. We just started that.
Mm-hmm.
Just started it within the last month. And the state's looking to push that out statewide to say, okay, there's this huge disabled population
mm-hmm.
that we've historically exempted from managed care.
Right.
You know, we want to start, you know, approaching this population and enroll them in managed care
mm-hmm.
so we can have someone coordinating and managing their care.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not happening right now.
Right. Right.
And that's kind of what we've seen with some of these services we looked at, is that they're bouncing around, you know, without any direction.
Right. Right.
And, so we ended up focusing on narcotic prescriptions
mm-hmm.
and emergency room use.
Mm-hmm.
So we identified the top 100 users of narcotic prescriptions.
Mm-hmm.
And that was based on the number of scripts they were written.
Mm-hmm.
When I say narcotics, I mean Oxycontin, oxycodone,
mm-hmm.
morphine, anything that fits in that
mm-hmm.
narcotic
mm-hmm.
Description.
Mm-hmm.
So we identified the top 100. With hopes, not with hopes, but with a process that was intended to ensure that they were legitimately being prescribed these meds. So we required these 100 recipients to get attestation from their physician, attesting to the fact they were prescribing these medications for these individuals, and they're aware of, or not aware of, other physicians that were doing the same. And they had to then come in, meet with us, and submit this information to us, and have a discussion with us regarding, you know, the scripts they're on. So we went through this process. A lot of people, or some people, didn't respond to us. You know, that population, we really have no recourse. Or SSI recipients, and we don't have the, you know, the ability to levy any type of penalty on them if they don't. They can just simply ignore us, which some of them did. We determined that about 70% of those individuals, we were satisfied that their use was legitimate. The other 30%, we didn't. Either they didn't respond or we didn't feel they responded satisfactory. So we, our only recourse is really a referral to the state's recipient restricted program. And what that is the state has a whole process. We can they identify people for inclusion in the program themselves at the state level, and the locals also have the ability to refer people to this program for consideration. They have a panel of medical professionals that then review this person's utilization of services and says, yeah, we think they should be restricted or no. And what restricted means is you can restrict them to one primary care doc, one pharmacy, or one inpatient hospital, or all three, or a combination of all three. So we referred these 30 off to that program, asking for a restriction of both primary care doc and pharmacy, with hopes that, you know, with some coordination and some management, you know, we'd get that use in check. Some of them had been referred back to us, and the state said, okay, you can do that. But then it's back in our court. We get in there, that we then have to go find a doctor that will take this individual on as a patient. So sometimes we can't do that. And we don't end up, you know, restricting them. It's really an imperfect solution, to be honest with you. And we've come to that conclusion. And really, to kind of give you, to bring this full circle, what we end up trying to use this for is we've really tried to become a managed care plan. That's what we've, that's kind of, as I stepped back a while ago and looked at this, I said, we're trying to use this data to become a managed care plan. We're trying to manage utilization of services and fraud, potentially. And the social services district has never been in the business of doing that. We don't have the expertise, we don't have the knowledge, we don't have the infrastructure to do that. That's what these managed care companies are there for. You know, our role has typically been, you're eligible or you're not. And here's the check to the state. So, you know, it became pretty apparent to me that I don't have the expertise to do this. We don't have anyone on staff that does. So that's why we threw our hat in the ring with this mandatory managed care for the SSI population. We said, we think that's the answer. Let the experts out there, you know, manage and coordinate the care for these most, you know, these most needed, you know, needy and vulnerable people. Instead of us, you know, I shouldn't say this on record, but we're just scratching the surface. So we're trying to do this. And so that's what David and I really made a decision. You know, New York City was the first one to go mandatory managed care for this population. And, you know, David and I made the decision, you know, we're going to call the state and say, we want in next. So us and Oswego County together are starting the really tough and long process of enrolling the SSI population in managed care.
What's so hard? Is it hard to convince managed care?
No, managed care is on board with it.
Because they're long-term clients.
Well, I mean, it's a challenge for them, too, because they get a capitated payment. So, they really have their work cut out for them in managing that person's care. So the payment we're making to them is higher than what they actually pay out for services. There's got to be a balance there. They're going to have some of our people that don't use you know, medical services hardly at all. So they make out on that because we're right. paying a premium.
Right.
But then they're going to have others that use a whole lot of services
right.
that, where the premium doesn't cover it.
Right.
So there's got to be that balance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then the state sets the rates for those plans. We don't get involved with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they're on board with this.
Mm-hmm.
And but the struggle is the population.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to remember, you know, the population is very difficult to deal with. They're,
mm-hmm.
a lot of times it's mental. It's obviously mental disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Dual diagnosis people with,
mm-hmm.
with drug and alcohol and mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
So the struggle is reaching out to them, explaining
mm-hmm.
to them your health care is changing.
Mm-hmm.
No longer can you just go
right.
to whoever you want to go.
Right.
You know,
right.
United Healthcare or Fidelis, whoever
mm-hmm.
plan you get enrolled in
mm-hmm.
is going to be telling you
mm-hmm.
where you're going and who you can go to.
Right.
And that's another struggle, looking at their array of services
right.
now and saying,
right.
okay, you go to this doctor, this doctor, this doctor.
Right.
Okay, are they in? What plans are they in? Because
mm-hmm.
not all doctors are in every managed care plan.
Mm-hmm.
So you got that whole we actually put on 2 additional staff a while back to
mm-hmm.
do just this,
mm-hmm.
to help facilitate that enrollment process
mm-hmm.
that we're going along slowly in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's
mm-hmm.
really the conclusion we came to. After, you know, a year and a half
mm-hmm.
of using this system.
Sure.
You know, I don't know really how innovative
yeah.
that
yeah.
really is.
Sure.
Well, I mean, a reason that I was interested in is because in this class, they
uh-huh.
they build databases.
Okay.
You know, they build relational databases using Microsoft Access, and they build it
okay.
on a model of wherever they're interning.
Okay.
You know, so they make one for their intern site. And so, excuse me, this came up. Do you know Dr. Murali Venkatesh?
No, you mentioned him in your email. No, I don't know.
He was the one that sort of made the connection.
Okay.
We were doing some research together.
Okay.
And he's an IT type of a person.
Okay.
So, you know, I just kind of wanted an idea for how this works.
Yeah.
Basically for, you know, so I can sort of get an idea for how relevant... You know, give another example to students about how relevant their database construction skills are, how
okay.
it's being used in other places.
Okay.
But then I'd like to sort of jump into the things that you thought were innovative. So,
okay.
you know, without
sure.
spending too much time. We've already spent 21 minutes.
That's okay.
So, mm-hmm.
You know, some of this data I had to scrub because it's confidential.
Sure, sure.
You're not allowed
I can't see from...
Yeah,
I mean,
you're not allowed to see client-specific information.
Sure, sure.
So,
mm-hmm.
This is kind of what I call the global screen. I set up a demo for you.
Sure.
So
oh, okay. Oh, thanks for. I didn't know you to go through the.
No, that's okay.
Yeah.
A lot of them were already done for other demos I've
okay.
done with this. I've had
okay.
to do a lot of demos
mm-hmm.
with this. So, this is kind of what I call a global screen,
mm-hmm.
and this shows by category of service:
mm-hmm.
physician, home health, capitation. That's the HMOs.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Long-term care. It shows the major, really, categories of services
mm-hmm.
and related expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And when it says this, it means this year, which is 2007,
year.
And
mm-hmm.
against last year.
Mm-hmm.
So this shows you the gross Onondaga County Medicaid expenses,
gotcha.
$547 million,
mm-hmm.
which we pay roughly $90 million or so of,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and the state and feds pay the rest.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the global screen where you can
sure.
where you start.
Mm-hmm.
From here... If I wanted to, I can go in here and I could drill in to this category
mm-hmm.
and look at all the providers that make up that amount
mm-hmm.
with a click of a button.
Mm-hmm.
Then I could also go in there and look at all the recipients that make up
yep.
that amount.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could drill further into the recipient and look at the diagnosis related
mm-hmm.
to the amounts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very powerful tool that... we've never had the ability to look at data like this. That should have been what I started with.
Yeah.
Ever before. I mean, our ability to look at data has been a very antiquated process
mm-hmm.
that's still used by some counties
mm-hmm.
where you request data on a person
mm-hmm.
and the next day you get a big, thick green bar report
gotcha. Uh-huh.
that shows you this, all the services that they've used.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no aggregate data available
mm-hmm.
before then
mm-hmm.
until the state built this warehouse,
right.
this
right.
Medicaid warehouse,
right.
data warehouse. And really what
and
this is
doing...
And that's
where this data comes from?
That's right.
State Medicaid?
Yep. What this is doing is pulling just our data out
right.
of that warehouse, putting
right.
our own local server,
right.
and then using their...
Mm-hmm.
Software application
right.
to analyze
okay.
it and to look at
so
it.
So the state hasn't developed a software application to look at
the state
it.
Allows counties to tap into the data warehouse directly themselves.
Right. right.
But we tried to do that.
Yeah.
It was taking hours
mm-hmm.
and hours
mm-hmm.
to get queries back because
mm-hmm.
there's billions and billions of records
right.
in
right.
that thing.
Which is very slow.
So it made, you know, one of the first steps, and you didn't need telling you to
yeah.
do that, was
right.
just to take your own data out of
right.
there and put it on your own server.
Right.
And then start to look at
so
it.
So you have
somewhere.
Somebody who regularly does that, updates your...
Salient, it's all done automatically. Salient continues to
oh,
do
so
that.
Oh, so they wrote some some sort of a script.
So they automatically, I think it's a weekly basis, they pull more data in.
Is it done automatically, automated this way, or does someone at Salient make sure that happens?
Someone at Salient makes sure that happens.
Okay, all right, all right. Now, do you know how, is this a relational, do they use the terms relational versus hierarchical database structure?
Explain them both to me and I'll tell you what it is.
Well, hierarchical is really sort of structured on, you know, there's one way to retrieve things, and things are stored in a preset location, which can handle a whole lot more data, as long as you always access it. This sounds like the old system.
That's what it was, and that's what it is in the warehouse. With this, it isn't.
This, you can relate things. Usually things are stored. Can you show where these are stored in different spreadsheets, link tables, that link according to primary keys? This might be getting too technical. But there's
a primary
key.
I can't show you that, but...
Right. But for instance, the physicians are linked to individuals through primary keys, and the physicians are linked to the county by a county key. You know, so they're, but that's probably what allows you to drill down.
Exactly.
So this is sort of and relational, of course, can't handle the huge mass that you can on the state hierarchical. You know, you'd be very slow.
Right.
Here.
Well, and this, you know, another key to this is it's user driven.
Yeah.
It's not a stagnant report.
And so you can write new queries if you like.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great. And you can define, you know, when I click, I can click on this right now.
Uh-huh.
This right now breaks physician services down into subcategories.
Right.
But I can go in here and change what I want that click to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can go and write and say, okay, when I click on that, I want all the providers to come up.
Mm-hmm. To put it,
you can go in there and do that. Yes, you can do that.
Great.
I haven't done it, but you
can just have Salient do it for you. Or, I mean, you request it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a way to do that for sure.
Great.
I mean, they have a lot of shortcuts, too. Like, if I want to look at all the providers under physicians, I just go up here and hit keys, provider, list, and there's that $237 million for physician services in a click of a button, and here's the providers.
This is by provider. So this would be the equivalent of a table or a, you know, sort of a spreadsheet, basically, and this is what's linked.
Yep.
Great.
So right here it shows, you know, this ties back to the, you know, the physician service total from the from the first screen.
Mm-hmm.
And then here's each of your providers.
Right.
And the dollar amount
and
associated.
That's their primary key or their social security number.
Well, what that is, that's their vendor.
Their vendor number.
So, you know, if I wanted to, I could then drill farther into this and see all the diagnoses and related costs.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, this is very helpful because it sort of confirms what they're doing is you know, is current. Do you have an example of a report? What a report looks like that you find useful? Do you ever? Or I mean, I can tell that you can.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing with this. Yeah, that's the thing with this. Yeah, there is no reports.
You don't have.
You sit down at it and you're in the driver's seat.
Right.
You determine what you want to do, where you want to go. There's no standard report. They call these bookmarks because they may be things that you've worked on and got to a point and said, hey, I may go back to this periodically.
Right.
Let's bookmark this, and that's what these are.
Right.
You can set up predefined bookmarks.
Right.
And, you know, it's very easy to do once you get to the point. You say, okay, this is a screen that I think I'd use periodically. Mm-hmm. You just name it, throw it in a folder, and it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And you can set them up globally, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that means, you know, someone in Monroe County who has this can look at my global bookmark and use it with their data. Because I only have access to my data.
Right.
For Onondaga County, but you can put a global bookmark out there, and it will allow other Salient users across the other counties to use that bookmark, but with their data. So, this was just the first screen. I was going to show you some other shots.
Oh, sure.
You know, here's a provider shot for the total. Again, this ties back to the total screen from the initial screen. This all ties back in terms of expenditures.
Mm-hmm.
And this shows you, you know, I usually rank it from highest to lowest. I'm a numbers guy. That's just what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it shows you all the providers and what they're paid for that time frame.
So, do you have particular things that you from your accounting training that help you do this?
No.
So it's all basic.
No.
You know, you're into spreadsheets.
Yeah, accounting really. You don't really have any background in accounting. You don't really use any of those tools for this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's different items you can insert to these screens: volume, cost, duration, frequency, and conditional. Volume would be anything from, as you can see here, average diagnosis per recipient, drugs dispensed, prescriptions filled, and with a click of a button, I can add prescriptions filled per month.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
By provider.
Great.
Um, If you look at costs, I can enter any of those cost categories.
Mm-hmm.
All these different costs, be it federal share, county share, state share.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Duration, days of drug supply.
Mm-hmm.
Frequency, average service claim count per recipient. That will show mm-hmm. you how many Medicaid service claims this mm-hmm. person is mm-hmm. getting on average per whatever time frame you define.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I want to look at this data goes back to, I think, 2001 is the farthest it goes back. But I can change, you know, right now we're looking at 2007.
Mm-hmm.
I can go back to...
Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it changed automatically. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at 2001 compared to, well, last, you know, 2000 data in here. That's why there's nothing in there.
Right.
It actually looks like it cut off some of 2001, too.
Yeah.
It's only 334,000, but...
Do you know what platform this is created in?
I believe it's a SQL platform.
Uh-huh. All right.
Mm-hmm. But it's the code is proprietary.
Ah. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're paying license fee every
year. Right, right, right.
So.
Yeah. Well, I happen to know there are other people in the county who could do this. I mean, who do similar stuff, but it would take a tremendous amount of time to write all that.
Oh, yeah.
Those queries.
Absolutely.
And then have them on drop-down boxes. So,
well, that's the thing.
That's what you're paying for.
This thing was built, you know, years ago for a specific purpose.
Yeah.
But, you know, I obviously saw it could be applied to any type of data.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. Here's my recipient bookmark.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it ties back to the total number we looked at initially,
mm-hmm.
and it shows you by recipient
mm-hmm.
for that total.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at it, there's a, you know, goes all the way down to, mm-hmm. I don't know why zeros are showing up, but.
Was this 2001 still?
No, we're back to 2007. But I mean, there's, you know, what's the recipient count here? Well, 228,000 recipients, so. You know, you can see that the top client here in 07 spent $538,000.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can go in here and I can look at just keep your eyes closed for a second.
Sure.
I can go into physician services and look at let me give you an example of this thing's so complicated, it's mm-hmm. I only know how to use a fraction of this thing.
It just takes time to sort of play around with it.
Oh yeah, and I don't have that's a problem. We don't have anything dedicated towards this.
Yeah, yeah. Now the rest of your sort of accounting for county expenses.
See, that here now lists all the diagnoses this client has had. You know, then I could then go back and put the dollars related to each of the diagnoses in there.
So this is, actually that was a helpful screen to see. They put it in a separate table, which is what?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, new tables and new screens pop up as you drill into this information.
Right.
Well, you know, the reason is because I'm on a specific individual. Now what I'm doing, everything I ask this to do now is just on that person.
Oh, this is just that person.
Right.
Okay.
So if I were to, you know, if I were to ask some queries at this screen, it would give it to me for all of these people.
Yeah.
So when I double clicked on this recipient and then pulled up another screen, that allows me to run all the various queries I'd want to on just that person.
Gotcha.
Or I can make a collection of a certain amount of people, a sub-collection, and then do queries just on those people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If I wanted to find some related,
mm-hmm.
you know, diagnosis, and put these people all together and say, okay,
right.
what are they spending for, you know, whether it be asthma or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
See, again, when I talk this language, I'm no expert in this, and that's one of the issues, is you need to know this data to make sense of it.
You mean what exactly these diagnoses are?
Diagnosis, all this data. I mean, it's more conducive to somebody who knows how to bill Medicaid,
and knows
the medical profession.
Right.
We don't know these things.
Right. Well, do you have demographics on people where you could run sort of regression models with this data? Because I mean, I can see
you
that
could.
you can pull up certain things and just name them dependent variables, and certain things connected and just call them independent variables, where you could sort of...
You probably could do that.
You could predict high spenders. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you could probably do that.
You know, but
I mean, this gives you all the demographic information you want.
So it's in there, right? Yeah. It has, yeah, so... Yeah.
I mean, it's,
Yeah.
Sex, marital status, anything you want.
Right.
So...
Yeah, you could throw things in there like providers, and you'd notice if a provider was significantly related to higher spenders.
Yep, you could do that. Yeah. I mean, you could look at service outliers. This is something I wasn't going to show you, but this is just for diagnostic and treatment center services for freestanding clinics. Mm-hmm. Then you could point to these outliers.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
And you could do this scattergram for any type of category service you wanted to.
Right.
And then, you could see both. This is recipients, but you can plot this for providers, too.
Right.
This is just another way to look at it. These screens I've showed you before give you the same information. It's just not in a scattergram.
Right.
Exactly. So, let's see what else I was going to show you.
Yeah, I don't want to take up too much time for this, since I know you had to...
Yeah, there was... I just want to show you one other thing. Mm-hmm. It kind of relates to...
Did you have GIS linked to this where you could actually plot the highest?
Yeah, let me show you. Actually, I don't know if it's set up on this. These recipients, they got the coordinates.
Oh, the coordinates, okay.
So you'd have to feed those into.
Yeah. If you just open up GIS, you could.
Yep.
Or if you had their addresses, you could just geocode them and it would just plot where they were, and then you could color code them by high versus low.
Well, these are their addresses coded already.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, you could use either this. When you go into GIS, you could either use this, the Latin longitude, or you could use their addresses. If you didn't have this, you could, and it would give you the same thing. It's pretty neat.
This was something interesting that we looked at. Nothing really came out of it. Was services after death. So this is the death month here.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is the date of payments. Uh-huh. So, like, if you see here, for example, this is the death month of August 2005, and they're still, because these are service periods, these dollars related to, not paid periods, which is a big difference. You can see there's some payments being made.
Hmm.
And we caught a couple where the managed care company was still tagging for it. It was harmless, but it was a mistake. And there was other incidents where the date of death we put in here locally, there were mistakes in putting the date in. So we thoroughly investigated this, and there really wasn't a lot of issues there. And here's a narcotics screen that we used to do our sample of 100 people. Mm-hmm. We did it by scripts written, so... this person alone had 155 scripts in 2007 written for narcotics alone.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, with narcotics, they're monthly scripts.
Right.
You can't get more, it's not like getting high blood pressure medicine you can get for 6 months.
Right.
It's but still, 155. It's
more than 12. Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
So what we did is we identified the top 100. This probably has changed since we did the project, because we continue to look at this query and see any new ones coming on, and then we follow the same process that we followed.
Mm-hmm.
So we've really increased the number of people we've enrolled in that restricted program.
Mm-hmm.
The next step now will be probably another 6 months to a year. I'll go and look at, this was their service utilization a year before we restricted them.
Mm-hmm.
This is it now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
to
see if that restriction really worked. Because really... And that's why I said it's an imperfect solution, because the restricted program really isn't meant to reduce costs.
Right.
It's really to get the person better care, and if they're sick, they're sick.
Right.
So it's really, that's why managed care really in our mind is the better alternative than this restricted program.
Right. And it's also to avoid people going to multiple physicians.
Right.
The goal is reselling.
Not that we know that's happening.
Right.
But our theory is if you have one physician, you're more likely, to be getting better care.
Yeah.
And to not be doc shopping or pharmacy shopping or another thing I did, which I think I have, emergency room utilization was the other project I did, and I identified the top 10 emergency room users, and this is 108 visits to the emergency room in 2007.
Right.
That's So what's that, twice a week?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
So what happens is, and again, these, I guarantee almost the top probably 100 of these are SSI clients,
mm-hmm.
and they're not in managed care,
mm-hmm.
and they're not getting their care managed and coordinated,
right.
so they're using the emergency room as the as their primary care doc.
Mm-hmm.
We can't, by law, obviously can't restrict someone's use of an emergency room.
Right. Right.
So we sent these off, we sent 10 of these off as well, and I think we've restricted a couple. Right. But I think I did a quick check to see any difference in use, and there hasn't been,
mm-hmm.
and there may not be, because
right.
we can't, you can't
right.
stop that.
Right.
You know, your hope is that the primary care doctor they get assigned to
right.
kind of, you know, brings them down to reality a little bit and,
right.
and says, okay, you don't need to run to the emergency
mm-hmm.
room when you have a sniffle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You make an office visit and we can take care of
mm-hmm.
it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is very different from, say, the TANF program or something like that.
Oh, yeah. It's absolutely mm-hmm. different.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I was going to mm-hmm. demo to you.
It's very helpful, yeah.
You know, again, I think when I read, you know, kind of what your research was about
mm-hmm.
and what you were looking to do, I more and more thought less that this would fit
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
in that, because it really isn't something that helps us on a day-to-day manage our program
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and make it more efficient and more effective and more
mm-hmm.
Accessible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's really kind of this piece mm-hmm. of technology that we've kind of
right.
lopped off to the side.
Right.
That we said, this is nice.
Right.
It gives us good information,
mm-hmm.
but it really isn't practical.
Right, right.
In its everyday application.
Do you use similar systems for your day-to-day management of things, or what is it, mostly spreadsheets?
Well, it's varied. I mean, had developed for us a while back, and it's still kind of an ongoing process, a case mm-hmm. management application and
mm-hmm.
temporary assistance intake.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone first walks in the door mm-hmm. and applies for
mm-hmm.
for temporary assistance for PA,
mm-hmm.
We have a system in place called SIMSIS that was built by a developer
mm-hmm.
that allows us to, in essence, manage and facilitate the intake process.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't determine eligibility for you, but it facilitates setting up appointments, case notes,
mm-hmm.
paperwork, and then once the other problem is it doesn't pull. You're working with two systems. You got SIMSIS and you got WMS, which is the state,
right, the state's
management system. And then once the eligibility is determined, the system isn't carried over to undercare yet,
right.
where the cases are then maintained.
And that's all WMS.
Yeah, what information you have there, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we have another homegrown application that kind of undercare is using now
mm-hmm.
to help manage their cases as well.
Mm-hmm.
So when I think about innovation and kind of what you're looking at, that's mm-hmm. I think more on that lines
mm-hmm.
is, you know, software that's been developed to help you actually manage our day-to-day business.
Sure, sure, yeah. Do you want to talk more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably not the best person
uh-huh.
to get in depth with
uh-huh.
the SIMSIS product.
Uh-huh.
But that's an area I could steer you to if that's an area you might want to go. I can put you in contact with probably the best person to talk to about that.
Well, maybe would, I mean, part of it is research, but part of it is applicability to class, right? I'm teaching
right.
the students how to make databases.
Right.
I want to know what's being used. I want to know
right.
what people are wanting to use and what they're finding useful and things like that.
Yeah, I mean that. You know, so, that's a pretty complicated database
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it was. You know, I won't even get into the sordid story of what happened with the developer,
mm-hmm.
but he
mm-hmm.
went south on us, and now we're trying to put the pieces together with it. So, but that was mm-hmm. that's definitely something. It's
right.
it's what we rely on. It's what we utilize.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
really allowed us to operate with a greatly reduced staff. I mean,
right.
over the last what 10 years, we're down 25%
staff wise.
Yeah,
because of the.
Well, just because
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
early retirements,
mm-hmm.
You know, the technology didn't drive the exodus.
The
it's the other way around.
Right.
We lost bodies,
mm-hmm.
and in the meantime, we needed something to be able
right.
to keep
right.
up with the demand
mm-hmm.
of our services.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really allowed us to do
mm-hmm.
that,
mm-hmm.
especially because really it's only operational
right.
in TA and intake. The goal was
right.
is to have this all-encompassing system
mm-hmm.
that will facilitate the intake process for all
mm-hmm.
of our programs,
mm-hmm.
allow you then to manage those programs once or those cases once they become active recipients,
right,
link images to it,
right.
So we no longer have paper documents.
Oh,
I mean,
that's a lot of space requirement.
This was meant to be an all-inclusive system.
Yeah.
I don't know how, you know, we're kind of really right now in a major flux of where we're going with that whole thing because, you know, like I said, the guy's gone.
Right.
You know, he went belly up.
Right.
So, you know, the first step is trying to...
Did he give you the script?
He didn't give us any of the documentation of how he wrote it.
See, that happened at the college.
Yeah.
But the vendor went out of business and gave us the script, so we've been using it for 10 years.
We had to pay... Well, that was our concern is this guy's gone. He's out of the picture. If this thing crashes tomorrow, we're screwed.
Yeah.
And so we had to pay somebody else.
Yeah.
Actually, some of this, but I probably shouldn't be talking
about. Yeah, whatever you want, whatever. Yeah.
If we had to do it again, I might do it in a different fashion, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
I might say, okay, let's look at the process. Is it the most efficient and effective process we have now, or isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And let's build what we think the best, you know, the ultimate state of this process could be, then add technology onto it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but that's not what happened, so... So we're trying to piece that together and figure out what our next steps are.
Happens everywhere.
Yeah, there's I don't know if you heard this application down in Nassau County, the No Wrong Door.
No.
It's an application that was built for them down there that might be a target of your research.
Mm-hmm.
They have they in essence had a lot of their human service departments out in different locations.
Mm-hmm.
Part of this was they brought them all into one building, you know, mental health, social services, aging and youth, you know, all the human services programs.
One stop.
That's the concept. It's a one stop. And you'll hear the county executive talking about that tonight.
Really?
If you get a copy of her state of the county. But
is this like the under the Workforce Investment Act, 1998, that one? Or is it,
no.
Okay, because that was really like the one stop was really a buzz.
Yeah, I mean, it's what... What they attempted to do, number one, was physically locate all these services in one place.
Mm-hmm.
The next was to have one common waiting room. So when you walked into this building, you know, you walked into one area, regardless if you're there to see, you know, a mental health counselor or a health nurse or a TA worker or whatever it was, and a whole tracking system is the front end of this.
Uh-huh.
So you walk in, you get a number in a picture of yourself that you put on your shirt. And that's what stays with you the whole day, and that's what tracks you around that building. And it, you know, allows a common intake process to say, okay, you're here to see who.
Right.
Boom, boom, put that in. Here's your sticker and your number. Then it sends off a message to whoever they're there to see that they're there waiting for you in the waiting room.
Mm-hmm.
So, it, you know, it's kind of the way I view it, it's kind of a common intake process, and you're still rooted then to to where you need to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, in my mind, truly a one-stop shop.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you walk in and say, okay, I need a mental health counselor, and I need a visiting home nurse, and I need Medicaid.
Right.
And someone comes out and says, I have it all for you.
Yeah.
They they come in and say, okay, you need this, this, and this.
Yeah.
And then you get rooted off to the different places still.
Right.
So
all in the same building?
They're all in the same building. We're all in the same building here, though, except for...
Yeah.
And we got WIC off-site, but...
All right.
So, but... And we're looking at that application. We've gotten access to some demos of that application. It's functional in Nassau and as well as Jefferson County.
Uh-huh.
So
uh-huh.
The guy who actually developed it came in to see us a few weeks back and now has given us access to some demos to look at to see where there might be some value in that to add on to what, you know, what we're already doing.
Right.
And then imaging is a whole other thing. We're in the process of putting out an RFP to implement imaging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a records building over on Fayette Street that we rent three floors of. I forget how many thousands of square feet it is, but you wouldn't believe the records we have over there. Yeah. There's a retention schedule you have to keep.
Yeah.
But there's counties out there that are already doing this and they're imaging everything.
Right.
You know, and the goal of that would be to link those images to this case management system.
Mm-hmm.
So when, you know, John Doe comes in to see you, poof, you got case notes, you have payment information, you have images, you have everything right there.
Right.
And that's all, you know, that's the ultimate goal is to have a system like that.
Yeah. Do you have a separate IT department or a
we do. We do.
You that's
we have a systems division within social services, and then there's an overall mm-hmm. county IT. Because mm-hmm. okay. We have a ton of IT needs, as you can see.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, we got some guys that are pretty good in databases uh-huh. down there that have built uh-huh. a number of things that to help yeah. facilitate our processes. Mm-hmm. That might be even a discussion mm-hmm. you want to have, to be honest with you. Especially when you get technical around your database stuff.
It's, you get hooked on it. Yeah. Like anything else, you get to.
But I'm just saying, the you know, in terms of expertise, you know, those yeah. are the guys you'd want to talk yeah. to. Anything technical in that regard. So, mm-hmm. but you know, the other thing that David quickly talked to you about was a call center concept.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, when you call your insurance company, mm-hmm. your health insurance company, mm-hmm. you know, they don't say, you know, hold on, Frank, we're getting your caseworker.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, they have the data and the information right. in front of them to be able to answer the questions you have or right. help you in whatever way you need to be helped.
Right.
You know, we're typically a caseload type system mm-hmm. where, you know, you carry a caseload. Mm-hmm. You know, whether in Medicaid now is 1,000 cases, mm-hmm. in food stamps it was more than that. So the director of temporary assistance and food stamps said, you know, the undercare portion, the active case mm-hmm. portion, we can't do this anymore. It's just mm-hmm. it's just too many cases per mm-hmm. worker. Mm-hmm. So him and his staff, you know, started looking at a task-based system. They determined a lot of their time was held up mm-hmm. on answering phone calls from clients day in and day out, mm-hmm. and taken away from their actual paperwork mm-hmm. and work to mm-hmm. to continue to do redetermination of eligibility mm-hmm. and all the paperwork that goes along with that. Mm-hmm. So they said, let's kind of break this up into tasks. Mm-hmm. One of the tasks is a call center. So we invested in a new phone system, mm-hmm. and we man, you know, kind of the. We've kind of took a shot at where we think the resources need to be in each mm-hmm. task. Mm-hmm. We'll fine-tune that as we go along, mm-hmm. obviously. But the one task is a call center. So that's manned with individuals that have the expertise and the information mm-hmm. at their fingertips mm-hmm. to answer. And we've found out so far they're answering 80-90% of the calls mm-hmm. right then and there.
Hmm. Really?
Can be taken care of.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah. Yeah.
If they can't take care of it and it's an action, let's say they have a new baby and they mm-hmm. gotta add the child to the case. Mm-hmm. The call center person will assign the task to a worker that's in another group, another task base mm-hmm. or another task group mm-hmm. via the system that was built by our systems guy. Mm-hmm. They're able to route that task then to mm-hmm. a worker that goes to a rotational basis. Mm-hmm. Boom. Okay, get the case, add the child to it, done. Mm-hmm. Then he puts in their task completed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you have that group, it's called daily work, mm-hmm. a group that's doing daily work, and then there's the other group that's actually doing the recertifications. Because mm-hmm. remember, this system's right. operating in undercare, that these people mm-hmm. are already eligible. Mm-hmm. So in TA, there's a 6-month recertification process. Right. So, you know, you have kind of three separate tasks,
right.
Three separate divisions uh-huh. and tasks set up, and mm-hmm. so far it's been great. I mean, mm-hmm. the employees are really behind this because mm-hmm. now you go on vacation, you come back, you don't pile of work on your desk,
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
you know, mm-hmm. and the work's kind of, you know, distributed a little more evenly, mm-hmm. and it's just so far it's been, you know, it's early on, but it's you know, the reports so far are mm-hmm. glowing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I think can be applied to definitely other divisions, mm-hmm. especially Medicaid mm-hmm. In our department. So
this is temporary assistance, as in family assistance?
Family assistance, safety net, and food stamps. Uh-huh. The undercare portion, not intake.
Mm-hmm.
So these are for
cases.
Yeah, active cases, right.
Yeah.
So.
And how do people like working in the call centers? You hear things about call center work.
Like I said, we've only been, doing this for, 2 or 3 weeks now?
Mm-hmm.
So. So far, mm-hmm. for the most part, the employees have loved it
mm-hmm.
from the feedback we've gotten. Now, there's been a couple people, I think, that are concerned with it, but,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know.
Do they rotate, or is it specialized? You have a specialty, you're in the call center, you're in the daily work, or in the research?
Right now, I think it's specialized.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see any reason why it couldn't be mm-hmm. on a rotational basis. I think mm-hmm. potentially what he's attempting to do is define the most logical place to start new staff.
Mm-hmm.
Because starting, if you think about it now, the training's going to become easier too for us.
Because
mm-hmm. we can put the people probably in, it'll probably be in the call center, mm-hmm. we're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
they would go on the phones first because they would need just a certain amount of training to get to the point where they're 100% productive, as opposed to now where you get a new worker and it takes months and months till they get to the point where they can carry a caseload. Now, since you've broken the work up, the training becomes much more streamlined, and you can have a fully functional new employee a lot quicker. So, kind of to your point was, I think with Steve, he's the temporary assistance director, Steve Seifert. I think his thought is you know, let's identify what task here is probably the most conducive to start new staff. We can get them up and running, you know, a lot quicker than we would in the old system, where they got to do, you know, they got to do A to Z in the old system. The new system, maybe they got to do, you know, A to F.
So it's sort of kind of like a, you know, Fordism, assembly line-ish. Not assembly line.
Yeah, kind
of. But, you know, the specialization is there. You got components.
Instead of a generalist, you're a specialist.
Yeah.
And we've struggled with that concept off and on, as do a lot of people. You know, especially in human services.
It was pros and cons each.
Absolutely. But, you know, with the level of work we have and the reality that no more staff is coming, you know, these are the types of things that, you know, that we have to engage in and try to make work.
So is there a hiring freeze?
You know, we've been pretty steady with staff for the last 3 years. We've increased some staff, but it's been because we've gotten grants that are 100% fund the positions. But we really haven't, you know, and aside from Medicaid, we've added some staff in Medicaid because with the cap now, they're in essence free. But other than that, we've been pretty, you know, we've been pretty flat. So it's always a concern for us. You know, we know more troops aren't coming.
So
we got to figure out, you know, the most efficient way to provide these services. You know, I was thinking that, you know, that the call center isn't, well, it really did use technology because he did he developed a task-based database system that's allowed him to do this.
Yeah, so, they have to have it at their fingertips.
Yeah,
got to be able to flow.
So I'm thinking that might be that may be a little more conducive to what you're looking to do.
Who's it? That's Steve Seifert.
Steve Seifert. And if you want to, I can make the connection for you. It's up to you. I can reach out to him and say, you know, I can forward your last email from me to him, kind of give him a rundown on what you're doing. That might be a little more tangible and a little more practical, I think, than this.
Well, it's helpful. I mean, you know, there are multiple things, too. You know, one is trying to learn more about databases. And the other one is, you know, this entrepreneurial, these case studies.
I think that call center is ripe for a case study.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really early on, so I don't know how conducive Steve's going to be to sitting down with you because he really doesn't
I can wait.
He really doesn't have a ton of data on it yet. But I really think when I read what you sent me, that's what started coming to my mind, was either SimSys or that. Because that's really what, you know, what we've developed that's really practically being used to help us manage our work.
This is
more of an offline type.
You
know, software application that we're using here and there for for certain things. That's really not an really not an operational use for it.
Is he the same person for SimSys?
Yes.
Good. So that would be.
I mean, he's at least a place to start, definitely.
And I know the real person's gone.
Well, I mean, and that's why I think with SimSys in the state of kind of flux, it's not to say if we're using it. You know, for in a specific area, but that's why I'm thinking more and more the task-based call center type thing might be something you might want to lean towards. Because again, there was an application, you know, along with the I don't want to call it a high-tech phone system, but we had an upgrade the phone system, obviously, to be able to handle the level of calls and route it the way we wanted to route it. So a new phone system along with a database that allows the phone workers and the other workers in the different task areas to move work along. You know, those two things together might be something you want to look at.
Well, I mean, David had sort of described a metaphor that he had used. was it Ulysses S. Grant? No, no, it was Robert E. Lee. I don't know
sounds
if you
like about
digging in and freeing up workers for more labor intensive.
Yeah. Well, that's our mantra TA is an area that you know we're trying to change behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, people have to do things in order to get TA.
Right. Right.
Medicaid, food stamps, HEAP. You know, daycare to some extent. You know, we're not trying to change behavior there.
Right, right.
And so we want to dedicate the least amount of resources to those areas. So if we can use technology, you know, innovative, you know, processes, whatever it may be, that's what we want to do in those areas. That doesn't mean we want to apply those to TA as well.
Right, right.
But you know, our mantra has always been, you know, let's dedicate as little resources as we need to still get the job done effectively and efficiently,
right.
But to those areas where we're not trying to change human behavior, we're not trying to change behavior.
Right, right. That is costly.
Right. I mean, Medicaid and food stamps, it's all income and resources. You don't have to you don't have to work.
Right, right.
You don't have to look for a job. You know, HEAP's the same way. So
that Simpson, does that keep track of people looking for jobs and stuff like that, or is that a whole...
No, that's done over at JobsPlus.
That's
our employment arm. It's done through that's part of OCC.
And you have to interface with them, though.
We interface with them, but I don't, you know, I don't know if they use Simpsons or not. To be honest with you,
I think they use something called a big job.
I don't know.
I interviewed one of them.
Did you?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the name of it.
We definitely
a big job.
We obviously have to interface. I don't know if they use Simpsons or not. To be honest with you.
Okay.
So.
There's a Steve over there too, right? Doesn't matter.
Is there?
There's a Steve who works with the data something over there. Okay, anyway. So, well, this has been very helpful. Is there anything else that you wanted to sort of throw in there?
Those are kind of the irons in the fire right now.
Have there been a lot of performance measure changes? Do you handle that with sort of the accounting side?
Somewhat.
Reporting and stuff like that?
It's more handled... Well, another area of innovation you might want to take a look at is our contract management system. That's something that was recently developed for us as well that allows us to construct all of our contracts, and then via that might be a real good one for you to look at. Let me pull it up. And then to for those providers that have the ability, it's a web-based application. And they have the ability to go in and enter budgetary information, and then actually even bill using the system once once a contract's approved in there.
What's
going on here?
So another vendor constructed that.
Yep.
For you. And that's how they... Is that for things that you have to report to the state and federal government?
Well, you know, when we had this built, I mean, we do our own... We're unique in the sense that we're allowed to do our own contracts. All the other county departments have to go through the law department.
Okay.
David has the ability to sign contracts.
Okay.
He was given the authority to do that. So we have thousands of contracts. And they were all done manually. And so we finally said enough's enough. And the system that the law department was using really wasn't conducive to the types of contracts we have. So we went out and put an RFP out, hired somebody to build a system for us. That not only allows us to construct contracts and then from year to year just push them forward with a new date so they're all ready to go. All you need is to tweak the scope if you have to, change the budget if you have to. But also allows us to monitor fiscal. The budget, the fiscal aspects of the budget, as well as performance. We, long before the state has now started to put pressure on districts to include performance in certain areas of our business, we're way ahead of them on this. They've systematically started to require performance outcomes for certain services. The first was child welfare services, mainly preventive services that we provide in contracts that we have with agencies in the community.
Okay.
We had those in place already, so there's not going to be any problem with that.
Right. Just print out a report or copy and paste.
We're already doing it. I mean, the only thing would be, because they're really leaving it with some guidance up to us in regards to the outcomes we're measuring. So, you know, we're already on top of that. And then OTDA, who oversees, you know, temporary assistance.
Office temporary disability.
Yep. They're starting to now push down performance requirements for some of their, some of their money that they push down to us for contracts. Let me see.
Who builds these? Who do the RFPs go to?
This was built by a local company called AdeptWorks.
ADEP?
ADEP, is there, ADEPS, ADEP. Let me see, they're probably on here. Let me pull them up for you.
I'll look them up.
Yeah, Simpsons was a single vendor. This was AdeptWorks. You know, Salient, or the Muni Miners, obviously Salient. It was more of an off-the-shelf product. It wasn't built for us.
Right. And you do you, does this have a similar functionality where you can drill down?
Or you have somewhat, yeah, you have the ability
preset screens that you like to look at, and they've built those so that they're at the click of a button.
Yeah, I can give you a quick demo of this too. It won't take that long. I'm just trying to they just move me over to the state network. And some of our applications are moving a little slow now.
Sure, yeah.
I won't even get into that whole. Yeah, it's AdeptWorks, ADEPT.
Okay.
So here's a shot of our existing contracts for 2008. Mm-hmm. Obviously, here's the different years.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't start using this until 06. But so I can go in here and look. Here's the contract number,
right,
the payment source, the contract type.
Right.
Let's pick one out here. It'll make a little more sense to you. All right, here's one with Catholic Charities. It's a parent aid program that, in essence, is a child welfare program. Mm-hmm. Here's a contract number, the source of payment. That's that's more internal tech terminology that no one from the outside would really care about. But I don't know why that just happened. Let's go back down to that. That's the payment source out of our out of our budgetary items, the type of service, the name of the contract, and then the vendor, and then over here. You know, here I can actually open the contract and actually view the contract.
So these are scanned things, or these are digitally created
things? These are scanned.
Things? Okay.
Yep. Well, actually, let me rephrase that. A lot of it's actually, there's preset clauses.
Right. And you...
That it's a library.
You just click
you
which
build,
ones you want.
You build the contract. Yep. You build it, but then we're not all the way there. The signature pages, any appendices and attachments are scanned in.
Okay.
But then they become, you know, I can pull them up, though.
Right.
They attach them to the contract.
They actually sign. They scan it. And
put like, here's, I probably pick one that's not signed yet, but let me pull it up. Yeah, so once this is signed, you'd see a scanned-in page with the actual signatures.
Gotcha.
So that's the actual kind. Go to different, here's the scope. You know, here's all the scope, the compensation section, reports. These are all the different clauses, standard clauses of our contracts.
Gotcha.
Budget.
And you're pulling it all up for the same one.
Yeah, this is all the same contract right now.
And you could just print it all out in one.
If I wanted to, but we frown on printing contracts. No, that's the main reason why we got this thing.
Oh, it's just, yeah.
We don't want to print anything.
Right.
You know, like with big agencies like Catholic Charities, we used to print out a copy of the contract and send it to them.
Yeah.
Now it's okay. You got access to this.
Right.
You go on, you look at it.
Yeah.
You know, you can. They don't have the ability to change anything in here except for the budget. So if they got, you know, if they got suggestions about the scope or something, they'd send an email saying, you know, can we change this?
Right.
We'd go in, make the changes, and that's how the negotiation works. Here's the budget. you know, different items, you know, mm-hmm. labor, you know, operating, administrative, mm-hmm. and the revenue is coming from us.
Right.
And is performance in there too?
Yeah. Right there yeah. now. This may be a good one for you too.
So they have to update it on a certain.
Yep, they're required to on a monthly basis. I mean, the fiscal stuff, we want them to bill monthly so we know where we are in regards to their contract. But we're not that much of a stickler for it. If they don't want to get paid, then I guess you got enough cash in the bank not to get paid. But the performance, we're a little, you know, we start to step on them a little bit if they don't get it in there. Like here's just for this parent aid program, some of it's outputs. I don't know how much of the parent aid will be outcomes, but like here's quarterly number of families served. Number of face-to-face contacts.
And outputs versus those are outcomes. Outputs, how do you guys define them?
In my mind, outputs are, you're counting widgets. Outcomes are is quality. Outputs is, okay, I made five widgets. Outcomes is, you know, how well were those widgets made? Or you're trying to reach an outcome. Like,
okay.
Let's say for this program, for example, the number of face-to-face contacts to me is an output. The number of those face-to-face contacts you made and resulted in the child passing first grade, that's an outcome.
So outcome has a lot more to do with the client's behavioral change in that case.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, like these first couple I told you, the number of families served and the contacts, right. that's all outputs.
Right.
A number of case conferences held within 1 month of due date, that's all outputs.
Right, right. The reason I ask, because I have a class now with students, they do the logic models and then they do program evaluation plans and budgets and all. And yeah, trying to figure out another way to talk about outputs versus outcomes. It's hard to give a definition that holds everywhere.
It is. I mean, I think outputs is more understandable across the board.
Yeah, yeah.
Than outcomes. Right. I mean, that's why I always, my explanation is always, you know, it's how many things
right.
you're producing or you're doing. It's not, it has nothing to do with how well you're doing it and what the ultimate impact of what you're doing is.
Right.
See, none of this parent aid program is really, these are all pretty much outputs.
I'm not surprised actually with the way the federal. Is this a federal program?
No. These are all. We developed all these.
Yeah.
The state or feds have never required performance.
Well, they all want. Agencies all want outputs rather than outcomes.
Oh, absolutely. Because so. You know these aren't true performance or performance-based contracts in the sense that they're going to get paid
right.
whether they meet these marks or not.
Right.
But what we'll do is we'll use them on a long-term basis and say, hey. You know, it's been 6 months. You're not meeting the marks.
Right.
We're going to look to end your contract at the end of this contract term and go with somebody else.
Right.
That's more of what we use these for.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, okay, you didn't meet your mark for that quarter, you're not getting your money.
Right.
We don't agree really with that type of contracting. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it would fly around here. But let me go back to I want to show you the reporting piece. Have to go back to 07 so you can see a number of these contracts. The people are have the ability and it's conducive to them actually using the system to bill. So I'll show you an example of that.
To bill clients?
No, to bill. Say we got a contract with Catholic Charities for that parent aid program. There's an approved budget in there.
Right.
We've allowed them now to. For a period of time, for you know, a monthly basis, go in, enter their expenses by line item, and then submit that. That comes to me. I approve all of the bills in that regard. Then it goes downstairs to accounting, and they actually process the bill and pay it.
Gotcha.
They don't have to send in a paper bill anymore.
Gotcha.
You know how much time that saves them?
Yeah, imagine.
The next step for us is for things that go through a controller's office for payment, we still have to print out a claim form that we developed on here that mirrors the paper claim form. We still have to print that out, sign it, and send it up to be paid. But I'm working with them now for them to get access to this and just view it on the screen and then make the payment via that and taking the paper out of it completely.
Yeah.
So,
these systems ever go down?
I've seen some errors with this before, so we kind of got an ongoing. You know, I don't think we're paying a maintenance fee with AdeptWorks now, but they're more than willing. A phone call and they're Mm-hmm. They'll help if we need. This is called dashboards. This is my dashboard.
Mm-hmm.
Here are contracts in development for 08.
Mm-hmm.
You can see they're in various stages.
Right.
DSS sections, it shows whether they're approved or incomplete, provider sections. And then there's contract deviations. So this will show a deviation on either performance or budget, depending on the parameters that are put in there.
Percentage.
Yep. So if it's out of whack a certain percentage, it'll pop up on here.
Right. So
let's say they were supposed to serve 20 families in a month and they serve one.
Yeah.
It's going to show up here.
Yeah, gotcha.
The budget stuff's less important, really, but here this shows us contracts with upcoming expiration dates.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a section on here, you know, we require certain insurances of our vendors and our contractors. It'll show up, it'll pop up when insurance is expiring.
Mm-hmm.
That way it'll red flag it and we can track it down with the vendor and get it in so it doesn't interrupt payment.
Gotcha.
So there's a clerical type position that kind of is the glue that holds all the administrative pieces of this together. Sarah Merrick, who's our program coordinator, kind of is the she was the point person on this project. Worked with the vendor to get it built, and she's kind of the oversight person. But we have a clerical person that kind of does all the detail work in there, you know, creating the contract, doing the back and forth with the vendor, ultimately printing a hard copy that has to go, one has to go out, one does have to go upstairs, the controller still. And then here's reported agency data. So this is how they report performance and expenditure information. Like here's an example. Here's a special supervision program for diversion services for youth. So I go in here, it's expenses submitted for period two. You can see it's expenses have been submitted through period two. I've approved expenses through period one. So I can pull up the expenses for period two, examine them, and then approve them. Once I do that, this goes downstairs. Eight floors. Pops up on someone else's screen saying it's time for you to pay this.
So,
not a lot of our providers have that capability because a lot of our providers are foster parents, family daycare providers.
Right.
So they're still billing the old way. But so we're trying to put whoever we can on this that is conducive to their operations. So you know, this might be something you want to look at too. You know, so I can go in right now, and once I hit approve, like I said, I'll go downstairs and they'll start the processing the payment.
This is certainly going to provide a lot of helpful anecdotes for the class. Great. Well, thanks. I don't want to take up too much of your time. It's been an hour and 17 minutes. Are there any questions you have of me?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know what, you know, what your plan of attack here is in going forward. I don't, whether you disagree with me or not, I don't know if Salient, if the Muni Miners is a system or a product or an innovation you really want to put into that format you sent to me. I don't know. I mean, that's why I said I'll let you make that determination.
Well, the idea is, you know, trying to make case that he's... I make them after the fact. You know, we talk about what people are doing. And then I see, you know, I lay them all out and figure out what's the, you know, what fits best where in what part of the course. And then sort of write them off. And they're short. You know, so I did want to focus on something database-wise. But so you've given me two other options. And I'll just sort of see, you know, maybe fold them into one or something like that.
Okay.
For the class. And then, and so that's basically what we're doing now.